The mood is right, the spirit's up, we're here tonight.
Good. Sounds good, good.
And that's enough. Simply having a wonderful Christmas time.
Come on, guys.
Simply wonderful Christmas time.
Welcome back, Analysis listeners. We've got two people we want to welcome back to the podcast. We've got one guy that's a first time, long time, to steal a little radio jargon there. But welcome back, Denver, Colorado, the snowy mountains, Aspen, actually, Colorado, for Mike Hammond. Welcome back to the podcast, Mike Hammond.
What's up?
What's up, man?
Nothing. Merry Christmas, guys.
Merry Christmas. Merry Christmas. Nothing typically is happening around December 22nd, right? But Christmas in Aspen, it's going nice for you?
Yeah. This is the busy season. So it's kind of like the inverse of a normal Christmas. It's super busy, but you know, snow in the mountains, can't complain. So it's great.
Winter wonderland, I'm sure. And Denver, Colorado, equally as wintry and snowy. Jordan Harris, welcome back, buddy.
Yeah, thanks, man. It's been a minute. Nice to be back.
It's been a minute. You were just really excited to drink cocktails in the middle of the afternoon and talk holiday movies. So cocktails up. You guys have anything in your cup right now?
Of course. Cheers, yeah.
You know, cheers, cheers. So I see a giant beer. Mike's holding almost, it looks like almost like a blender mug full of beer. It looks very plastic.
Yeah, it was a tall boy. I poured into a big glass. Yeah.
Okay, big boy. And Jordan, what you got there?
Yeah, I got a little IPA.
Okay. Oh, it's going to get electric. I'm actually drinking Coquito. So this was something that one of my employees gave to me as a Christmas present. It's almost like a white Russian in a big jar. It's a Puerto Rican drink. And I've got the ingredients here if people are trying to make Coquitos at home. But it has 12 ounces of evaporated milk, 14 ounces of condensed milk, 2 egg yolks. Yep. I see your faces that you're making. This is radio, not TV, but the faces are intrigued, I will say. 2 cups of coconut milk, a pinch of salt, a tablespoon of cinnamon, and rum. So
yeah,
a little bit of Coquito here. This is my first taste.
It's a meal in a glass, and it gets you drunk.
Every drink is a sandwich.
It's like a classy white Russian. Sounds like
you know what? It's almost a little, now that this is my first taste of it. First of all, it's delicious. When I got it, people around the office were like, oh my God, you got Coquito? Like, pretty hyped down here in South Florida. But it's almost like a pina colada.
Pina colada.
It's kind of what it tastes like.
you know what? I got into Christmas time, eggnog and amaretto. I know it sounds weird. I really love it.
Eggnog is one of those things that doesn't taste as bad as I think it should taste in my head. Like I always avoid it. And then around Christmas time, I'll be like, yeah, maybe I'll drink some eggnog. It's Christmas. And I'm like, that's actually pretty good.
No, it's kind of tasty. I'm pro eggnog here. And I was just screaming at our last person that joined in to talk about amaretto, but a first time caller, long time listener, my dad, Robert Lewis Pantalone, everybody give a round of applause, a welcoming round of applause.
Howdy, gentlemen. It's good to see all three of you.
Yes. Thank you, Dad. Thank you.
Merry Christmas to everybody.
Merry Christmas to the listeners. So this is the structure here is a little bit of anti-structure here. It's almost going to be like a smorgasbord if you guys are at your holiday tables and it's a grazing table. You got a little cheese plate over here. You got some maybe cold cuts, maybe a little cheesy potatoes, but also like chips and salsa, like, you know, just kind of like a random smorgasbord. Got the pistachios in a bowl. That's pistachios. We love the pistachios. But, you know, it's going to be like a sampling of some holiday tastes and all things watching. So a lot of families come together on the holidays. You got to have something to do. You maybe play some board games. But at least in my family, we always have things playing on a TV or on a projection screen, right? You've got, you know, It's a Wonderful Life or things like that. So today we wanted to talk about some of our hangs as we're sitting by the fireplace. I hope maybe some of our listeners have some of the same traditions. Maybe they're very, very different, but we're going to be talking about what are our non-negotiables? Like, you got to watch it every year. Otherwise you feel like you've missed out. If I don't watch this particular movie on the holiday, I feel like something's wrong. I'd also like to talk a little bit about what I call Dark Christmas. So on Christmas Eve, I typically watch a lot of the anti-holiday movies. So I wanted to hear if you guys do something similar or what some of your takes on some of these films are that I'm going to list for you guys. And then the grand finale, we're going to bring this home, really has become a staple of our friend group is watching old Christmas holiday episodes of The Office. And so our Office subject matter expert, Jordan Harris, is going to give us his priority rank of what he thinks are the best, funniest, maybe most impactful or sentimental Office holiday episodes. So excited to talk to you guys about that. With that said, let's get into the non-negotiables. So whether it's Christmas Eve or Christmas Day, a lot of times my non-negotiables I'll save for Christmas Day after presents. But I would love to hear from you guys on what are the non-negotiables. Christmas isn't the same unless you get to watch these particular movies. We're going to start with Mike Hammond.
Okay. So I'd say, first of all, I think one of the reasons, like, Christmas is great, but there's always excuses to watch movies. If there's an excuse to watch a movie, it's like a home run, right?
Yeah.
So that's why Christmas is so fun, because you've got
a lot of downtime.
It's winter. It's dark out. It's like, okay, well, we have so many movies to watch. So I think that's one of the fun parts. And I go less Christmassy Christmas movie earlier in December, and then closer I get to Christmas, there are more Christmas movies.
Okay, so tell me about the less Christmassies. Let me hear some of your lead up. Let me hear some of your runway here.
Look, I don't want to have the tiresome internet debate on Die Hard being a Christmas movie.
I'm so tired of that conversation.
Yeah, it's the dumbest conversation ever. We have a Die Hard party. Been trying to do it almost every year. We had it 2 weekends ago.
Tell me more. What is a Die Hard party?
Well, it's very festive from the perspective of there's always a cocktail of sorts. It's usually White Russians, which I never drink.
Or a Capito.
Yeah, right. So making White Russians, we actually open with a couple Office episodes from like Christmas episodes while people are kind of drinking and getting snacks. Okay. And then you settle in for an 8:30, 9 o'clock showing of Die Hard, which is just an unbelievable time every year. This is incredible. So Die Hard's non-negotiable. It's incredible. So much fun every year watching that. So
I did get a photo from this year's party, and I was having some FOMO on it. So thank you for my invite. But Allie, your wife, was wearing a gray sweater that she had fashioned into "I have a machine gun now, ho, ho, ho."
Fantastic. And that's what I mean. The party's really, costumes are going to be more incorporated. I'm gonna dress up next year. We're going to tell people to dress up. We're really going to take this thing to the next level. But that was the first person to dress up in a Die Hard themed outfit for it.
When I get my invite, I'm going to dress up like Ellis. And I'm going to have the Diet Pepsi or the Pepsi and Hans, Bubba. This is radio, not television. Every year I'm gonna do a different nuanced character. I think McClane's a layup, right? You wrap your feet, you get the wife beater or the tank or however you want to say it. You know, I think Hans would be a great character. There's different versions of Hans throughout the movie. But Ellis, underrated character.
It's funny that you say that, Bob, because we used to do this thing, right, where we would joke about, like, hey, if Bob was in this movie, what character would he be? Mm-hmm. And we usually always pick, like, some small, obscure character that does something embarrassing or gets killed real quick. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And for some reason, whenever I watch Die Hard, I always think Ellis, like, Bob. That's Bob would be a great Ellis. Yeah.
Yeah, hitting on McClane's wife.
Sales guy.
A sales piece of shit. Just a little worm, you know, over assumes his intellect against people far more superior than him. It really, I feel very seen by Ellis in different ways. That would be my character for sure.
And to add to what Mike was saying, that tradition, that's like something Mike and I started sort of by accident years ago when we were both living out in Denver. And I can't really remember how it came to be, but I think it was one of those things where we're living out in Colorado, our families aren't around, so we're getting together to do something on Christmas Eve. And it's just like, all right, what do you want to do? So we start off with some Office episodes. For some reason, decided it was Christmas. It'd be a good time to make some White Russians. And then after laughing through those episodes and getting lubed up, it was like, let's throw on some Die Hard.
Yeah.
And after the fact, we're like, well, that was about the most perfect night you could have celebrating, you know, the holidays with friends away from home. So let's make sure to do this every year. And it's pretty much just grown from there.
Yeah, there's a new group of friends up here. People, we just started a huge group text message, and we're just like, we're playing Die Hard. It's like all of a sudden 10 people show up. Like everyone wants to watch Die Hard. It's so fun. Everyone's seen it. They know it. It's like one of the all time kind of sing along movies, right? Where everyone's waiting for the, you know, no bullets, fucking stupid bullets, you know, like,
bullets.
It's such a fun group movie. So for it to be holiday based is the best.
Just this year, I got I bought it on Etsy. It's like a little box, and then in the background of the box is McClane with the lighter. You know, because it's him in the vent.
Yeah, I have that one too.
Yeah, I really went hard on holiday ornaments this year, like movie themed holiday ornaments. Do you have a particular favorite moment or scene from Die Hard?
I think the general. The first time you meet all the villains, like Hans, when everyone shows up, because it's just the most amazing, like, this is great. We have a foreign villain. It's like America versus another country. And then it all builds. And then Bruce Willis turns into no shoes, Bruce Willis mode. And then you're just off.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, this is great. It's going to be him versus the building. And we're off. So I think that kind of kicks off when the movie really is like just a 10 out of 10.
One of my favorite things, it's not a scene, but one of my favorite things is I don't think Die Hard's really trying to be funny. Like, I don't know that was really the intention, but it's fucking hilarious.
So funny.
And it's one of the things that makes the movie work so well. I've thought about it a lot. Like, Die Hard's often copied or tried to be copied. And it just
Cliffhanger, Die Hard on a mountain, Speed, Die Hard on a bus. Yeah.
And you can never quite do it. And I always wonder, like, why? What makes Die Hard so special? And I think the answer is, like, there's no like particular reason. It just works. There's just something about it that meshes together so well. And Bruce Willis is so perfect. And part of it is the comedy, which is great. And it's like almost to me, I think mostly unintentional, but I laugh every time I watch that movie.
Oh, I mean, Bruce Willis's dialogue to joke ratio.
Oh yeah.
I mean, off the charts, like when he's, you know, freaking Californians, you know, it's like, all this, just, you know, I don't know what a TV dinner feels like.
It's
great all-time one-liners. There's like 7 or 8 of them.
And those things are meant to be funny, but it's not like trying to be a comedy. It's not like trying to be funny. It's a hard thing to explain, but it just works so well.
No, it does. It's just all-time. So, I mean, Die Hard's number one, kicking off the holiday season, mid-December. Let's get everyone together. Let's get that going. So that's number one for me. I think number two for me is Christmas Vacation. I think that's the one growing up as a Midwest person. It was just like parents, it's on. And as we've discussed, Bob, I mean, I think Cousin Eddie is the greatest comedy cameo in anything ever. If we're talking about how much time someone's on screen, the whole movie is really just waiting for
Cousin Eddie. Yeah. It's two different, experiences. There's like pre-Cousin Eddie and then there's Cousin Eddie. Yeah.
Then it's just, I mean, again, unbelievable how funny he is in that movie and how great of like the family tie into that is of like, you know, everyone has a relative that shows up and it's like, oh God, here we go with this.
There's subtle parts of it too. Like, obviously you've got the one-liners and you've got like Snot the dog and the shitter's full and you obviously like the famous like printed on a t-shirt stuff. But I watched it again this year, like I do every year, and the scene where he is talking about coming in on fumes, the camper came in on fumes, and he's walking around getting groceries for everybody, but clearly for himself, and he's just piling these giant bags of dog food, and it's just like, it's that like grocery store, like you're wandering around the grocery store, and you're just putting anything in the cart. You know, I just like those little bits are things that I am starting to enjoy on the 60th watch that I've had.
Well, how he's dressed, his outfits are unbelievable. He's got the like powder blue turtleneck at one point. You know, he's got the boots and the robe on, smoking a cigar, drinking a beer at like 9 in the morning, emptying the It's
doesn't
just
he talk about anal? Like he like talks about like a gerbil and like anal with his wife when the kids show up. I didn't catch it until recently, but like he's like, yeah, the kids can stay in the extra room, but you know, me and the wife, we haven't had any alone time. So honey, go get the lube and the gerbil and we're gonna party. And I'm like, good Lord.
Yeah, no, but I think that really is the main reason why I watch it. But also that was just one, like I just said, was just, it's on every year, and you know, you grow up indoctrinated into that movie for sure. You know, Chevy Chase, that's the RL generation, I think, when he was just the biggest thing ever, right? And so
yeah, you know, comedy was just falling down a ladder. That's kind of all you needed to do.
Right. So I think that's just like our parents' generation, like that's just gonna be a staple. So I just always watched it.
We just watched it though. My friend and I just watched it, and I hadn't seen it in a long, long time. And it was really funny. I mean, I was just thinking as you guys were talking, the saucer, you know, moves up the saucer and goes flying up.
Yeah, the stuff he invents at his office, he like shines it up. He's like, oh, we just came up with this new model of Crisco or something. And and it was right on that.
You know, that kind of stuff. What's his name? Who plays Cousin Eddie?
Randy Quaid.
I loved it. His character was great, you know, because he just plays this idiot, you know.
But even like Uncle Lewis, you know, the Uncle Lewis. They show up like the weird aunt and uncle, and it's don't throw me down the stairs, Clark. It's just like these random like isms. I recently just read a book on all the kind of 70s comedy stars and kind of that 70s 80s era of kind of like golden age where you've got Aykroyd, and it talks about like Belushi, Chevy Chase, Steve Martin, kind of all these guys, John Candy, Bill Murray. And it talks a little bit towards the end of the book about the Vacation series and Chevy Chase, because Chevy Chase had this kind of like fucked up career. He came on SNL. He was a huge star. It had a series of just turds. He was trying to be this like sexy comedy guy, and just bad movie with Goldie Hawn after bad movie. And then kind of he was always playing this kind of heartthrob. And the Vacation series was him trying to reinvent his career. And he hated those movies. But they were always kind of his most endearing or more successful is when he went family. And the first one was successful. The European Vacation, there was all these problems filming. And this was kind of trying to revive him again. It was like a third revival of his career. But they said it was like the best and most joyful Chevy Chase ever was on a set, was like making this movie. They said he was really enjoying himself, and you can see it in the performance. You can see it in the way that the cast vibes and everything is Chevy was really having a good time on that.
Yeah. No, and the you know, suburbanite corporate job, I think that's the other part of Christmas. That's not the festive part of it. It's like the parent part of like, God, this job sucks, but every year we have this Christmas party and I can like, you know, buy stuff for people. And it's like, you know, you get older and like that becomes more of a Christmas story in itself. That part of it. I think it is interesting.
It's got some nice sentiment to it when he's trapped up in the attic and he's watching the home videos of his experience as a child in Christmas. And this, he's like trying to drag this magical experience for his family and his kids. And he's going to endure all this family just chaos, and it's very relatable. It's John Hughes. Yeah, I think it's relatable, right? You're a father, you're a family man, and you're trying to make the holidays as wonderful an experience as possible, despite any of the roadblocks in the way.
Yeah, it's funny when you start relating more to like the adult aspects of these movies versus some of the other parts. It's definitely makes you feel like you're getting older. But sort of tangent to that too is like what Christmas tradition is has been changing quite a bit over the years. Cause you know, I grew up and we had our own family Christmas traditions in Michigan. And in Michigan, my entire family was around, right? So that included, you know, the shows that we'd watch or the movies that we'd watch, and also going to grandma's house and grandpa's house and, you know, doing a number of different things, and then moved out to Colorado and was separate from family. And like Mike was saying, kind of started our own tradition. And now I've got, you know, a kid of my own and my own family. And he's three now. So for the first time, he's really starting to enjoy Christmas, like getting really into it and excited about Santa Claus. And that's been a lot of fun. And it's made Chrissy and I start talking about what we want our own new family traditions to be. So we're still figuring that out. But in terms of movies, the one thing that's stuck all the way through for me, the one movie is It's a Wonderful Life.
Yeah.
That one's reserved for Christmas Day. Kind of like Mike said, I sort of move into like the less sentimental to the more sentimental ones as you get closer and closer to Christmas. Sort of like more fun to more in your feelings by the time you get to Christmas. And It's a Wonderful Life is the one that gets me all feeling funny every Christmas morning. And that one's always, that one's a must. That's really the one movie that I make sure to watch outside of Die Hard every single year.
That's a staple, you know. Geez, that's such an old movie though. I mean, I remember watching it when I was a kid. That's an old movie, but I've always loved that. And I like the Christmas movies that brings that old time sentiment to it, you know, that just heart jerk thing, you know, and just always gets to me. It makes Christmas special, you know. One other thing too, when we were talking about Christmas traditions, I realized, you know, I was trying to bring my family's Christmas traditions in terms of present wrapping, right, to my kids. And I remember Bob and Mike's mom and I had a disagreement as to how this present thing was going to go. And I was like, oh, no, you got to wrap all the presents.
She wanted to put them all out without wrapping.
She just wanted to display them. And I was like, oh, it's so fun, man. The kids got to rip these things apart, you know, and see what's behind it. So that's what we ended up doing. Or at least that's what I ended up doing.
Yeah, that's fine. Well, you know, Bob, you're getting ready to get married. I know you and Breck have been living together for a while, but you start having this clash of the significant other's traditions and which ones are going to become your own traditions and having to figure that out.
Well, and that's what I was just going to say is, I had never seen White Christmas growing up. I just never, it just wasn't a movie that was on. But Allie's family, that's like there, It's a Wonderful Life. So the last years, I've watched that, which is, I had no idea, like the Bing Crosby part of all that and everything, like is like a really fascinating movie to actually watch in retrospect. But, you know, it's basically a musical for Christmas. So
it's not my vibe.
Where it's like, okay, yeah, throw it on. I've never seen this. Like, so you, even the traditions of Christmas, but also the movies, like movies that our family didn't watch. And it's a new movie we have now to watch every year.
Yeah. It's a Wonderful Life has the whole gratitude element. And it allows you to, you know, just even in a space of like Thanksgiving or kind of like reflection and, you know, health and family and happiness. It's a fantastic example of a character arc. Multiple character arcs, I guess I'd say. There's some hardcore shit that's said in it too, like when he's really broken, when he finally like snaps and I think he's on the banister of the, or he's on the staircase and he looks down at his wife and he goes, and why the hell did we have all these goddamn kids? Like, holy shit, I hope that didn't scar all the kids that he screamed at. I'm glad we reset that movie towards act three there. It's like literally just says, why the hell do we have all these goddamn kids? So yeah, martinis and I sell hot booze to guys that want to get drunk fast. You know, there's all these little sayings that Martini, the bartender, I always like to quote shout out some, almost like it's Rocky Horror Picture Show. You know, you get used to some of the sayings in all these movies. You
know. And I know it's well known by now, but it's the whole story behind the movie is cool too, how, you know, it was an older Jimmy Stewart. The movie wasn't a critical success. It became a Christmas classic back in the day because the rights to it had been not retained. So when TV stations were off air, they just played It's a Wonderful Life on repeat all day long because it was, I guess, cheap or free to do so. I don't know the details, but then people started rediscovering it again and falling in love with it. And it became a classic. So it wasn't an instant classic. It wasn't a movie that people saw and instantly became part of their Christmas traditions. It's something that sort of happened by accident over time, which is pretty cool.
That is really cool.
And that's interesting. I mean, I think those are my main movies. So don't want to keep talking about every movie, but that's why, Bob, I was texting you that the Holdovers this year was such a refreshing
to
watch, because it's like, is this a new holiday movie from 2023 that I'm going to watch? Like, maybe it'll be a classic at some point. I mean, it's
potentially. It's got a lot of the elements to it, and I love that you kind of had mentioned the Holdovers, because the same way that it wasn't an instant classic for It's a Wonderful Life. Alexander Payne didn't even want this to be kind of a warm fuzzy. A lot of the things being said about it, he was like, oh, that wasn't the vibe I was going for. But that's what ended up happening. And you don't get to control how audiences take in and view your movie. And so, you know, it's taken on a little bit. I think people are going to need to find it. But Hollywood's been trying very desperately to make a Christmas classic for a long time, basically since
like Elf. Yeah,
there's been this big void, and they're trying Christmas Chronicles, and they try the Kristen Stewart holiday. They're trying all these different angles, and it's just not
the holdovers just went, let's make a really good movie and have it be based around Christmas. But like, you know, I like you said, I'm sure he wasn't, this is going to be It's a Wonderful Life, but for a Christmas family movie and stuff, it hits all the notes. It really does.
Yeah, I'll probably be watching it. It'll be one of my lead-up movies. I don't know if it's made its way into Christmas Eve or Christmas Day yet, but definitely one. And go back and listen to all Matt and I's takes on The Holdovers. Actually, my favorite movie this year so far. Well, third okay. favorite movie. But after the Barb and Hagar experience. So real quick, one thing that It's a Wonderful Life does not have that Christmas Vacation does, does anybody get uncomfortable when Clark is like looking at the chick's panties in Macy's? Just always a weird thing that happens in my house. Like Brecken hates it. She's like, what the fuck is this? Like, and then he's like basically jerking off, looking at his like fake pool, like thinking of the chick in her panties again. And she's like, this is too much. This is 280s. So yeah. Anyway, it's like, yeah. It's a Wonderful Life. At least you're not going to get in a fight with your wife or fiance. If you put that on and you don't have to explain it, you know, when I go shopping, it's nothing like that. Yeah. So anyway, anyone else have a non-negotiable? Anyone, RL, do you have a non-negotiable besides It's a Wonderful Life that you watch?
Oh, Christmas Story.
Christmas Story. Speaking of ripping the paper, that best example of Christmas morning is A Christmas Story, right? What do you love about Christmas Story?
The relationship between Ralphie and his dad, and he finally gets the opportunity to go out and help dad with the car with the flat tire. And he goes, and what happens? It blows up in his face. He does the swear word. He gets in big trouble, you know, all that stuff. It's just personal stuff, you know, going on.
And that 50s holiday. You'll
shoot your eye out and the Santa kicks him down.
One of my favorite moments in that Macy's scene is Ralphie's waiting in line. Yep. And there's that weird kid.
Yeah.
That
keeps I like Santa.
I like Santa. I like The Wizard of Oz. It's like, leave me alone. I'm thinking. And anytime I meet someone weird, it reminds me of that kid. Mike, you were going to say something?
Well, I mean, Bob, you just said it. I think, you know, that's the movie. I think my mom and dad are like, this was Christmas for us. It's like an American staple of, you know, the Ovaltine and the, you know, the
Ovaltine.
All that stuff is like this, you know, soap in the mouth, you know, where the dad's an asshole and the mom's just sitting there like trying to, you know, just this like generational thing. So there's that part of it that I think is great. But I also that's a great, it's like a brother movie too. If you have a brother, part of, right? Like the bully getting in the fight and fighting with, you know, your brother's there, and you know, the snowsuit is classic, right? When he's
dressed up in arms
down. There's just a lot of classic Midwest, it's snowing out, I gotta go to school stuff. Right. Going on
leading up to Christmas. It's like these Christmas movies that are kind of the month of December. And I mean, Fragile, and just culturally what the leg lamp has taken on in ugly Christmas sweaters. Yeah. And, you know, you're an OG if you actually have the leg lamp one day in my imaginary basement that I'm going to own. The leg lamp will be there. I always love, from a sports metaphor, I was talking to someone about this the other day, and I'm a lifelong Lions fan. And so I know what it's like to be bullied both in sports talk. And I've been just, the Lions are now, they haven't won anything significant, but they're coming back, and I've been just talking a lot of relentless shit, and someone's like, man, you really like ramped up your shit talking this year in sports. And I was like, the metaphor I used was, I was like, it's like when Ralphie snaps on the bully and he's just beating, finally, he just is unloading all years of aggression and pent up rage. And he's just lashing out on Scott Farkas, and I'm like, that's kind of where I am right now on everybody. I'm just like, I finally get to like unload on all of you bastards, you know. Yeah. So like, I love the metaphor of like you're kind of pinned down, someone's got their thumb on you, and you finally turn it over and you just unload. I think it's such a great example.
Yeah, just blindly swinging.
Yeah, everyone's catching fish. Mom comes, he thinks he hits his mom, you know. It's the dad is so funny. Not a finger. It's just when he's sitting there with the leg lamp and it's all busted, his wife's
not a word.
Like, by the way, do you guys think she intentionally broke the lamp or not?
Yeah, I think she broke the lamp.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, yeah. All right. It's never expressed, but I think,
never know.
But it goes,
not a finger.
You're just jealous. She's like, why would I? That's the ugliest lamp. And that comes after Fragile is such a good moment. Anyway, he gets the box and it's Fragile. And then what do you think it is? It could be a bowling alley. What, a bowling alley? Well, I don't know, the deed or something. He thinks that the deed of a bowling alley came as his major reward. But and then he's like, you used up all the glue on purpose. Just like this conspiracy theory around his major award. Oh, so fucking funny. But yeah, the dad is the narrative is so good. The narrator is so good. Where it's like, my mom hasn't sat down to have a meal in 7 years when she's cooking the mashed potatoes. And or just my dad thinks he could rewire a house and, you know, when he short circuits the tree and all that shit. Yeah, it's beautiful. It's like the Christmas gift. Like, I think everyone has that one gift that was just like made your whole childhood, like all the Christmases kind of combined in this one present. And I think one thing we're saying besides Die Hard and a lot of these movies is relatable.
And then I want to give a quick shout out to not movies, but a couple animations or claymations, but the cartoon Grinch.
Okay. So 60s.
I watch every year. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Not the Jim Carrey.
Yeah.
Reimagination or bastardization of the original cartoon. And then I always watch I think it's also from the 60s, Claymation, I think. The Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer.
Oh, with the
Rudolph
one. Yeah.
I'm going to get punched by Brecken, my fiance, if I don't mention the Miser's Christmas, the Heat Miser. Dude, and the Freeze Miser.
This is a thing with Chrissy's family as well that was yearly for her. I had never heard of it. She showed it to me and I was like, I don't know what this is.
What is it?
The Miser's Christmas. I'm Mr. Heat Miser. I'm Mr. It's the two brothers, the two seasonal brothers. They're fighting. You guys, it's Rankin and Bass. It's like the same, like.
I don't think I've ever seen that.
You know, they did like Frosty the Snowman. Not Frosty the Snowman. They did Rudolph the Red, all the claymation stuff. Santa Claus is coming to town. But yeah, it's these two seasonal brothers and they're fighting over the holiday. And you don't know it? Okay. Go check it out. Give it a watch. Right. It's only been around for like, you know, our entire life. Forever, yeah. So yeah. I think that's a good place. The only other one that I would say is a non-negotiable is Elf. That's definitely one that we watch on Christmas every single day or every single year. And just Will Ferrell. It was early Will Ferrell. And I remember we saw it in the theater. I don't, Mike and Jordan, I don't know if you remember that we went to see this, but it was kind of after some of his like old school, some of his early ish movies, which were like very adult and vulgar. And it's like, oh, Will Ferrell is playing an adult elf that doesn't know. And I thought it was going to be a lot raunchier than it was what it ended up being. But I was a little disappointed the first time I saw it, I remember.
Hmm.
And it's got some of the greatest Christmas movie lines of all time. You know?
Elf has grown on me a lot. I didn't see it in the theater, so it wouldn't have been us seeing it together. And okay. I remember the first time watching it. It must have been around Christmas, but I remember being pretty significantly hungover and just mostly annoyed by it. And I don't think I finished it. I was like, I couldn't handle Will Ferrell's like screaming and his whole like bit. I just turned it off and had this take like Elf sucks. And I had it for years until I saw it over and over again, because you can't really avoid it around Christmas time. And then it would grow on me a little bit more and more. And then I realized that I must have just been in a cranky hangover mood when I first saw it and didn't appreciate it. So I'm glad that it's had the longevity. So
I can
enjoy it as well.
I mean, it was almost 20 something years old.
It's crazy.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah, and that's the last one. It's the last new movie that would be a rotation Christmas movie. That's why it's strange when you think about it, how no one has figured out how to do this. You think every 5 to 10 years you'd have a new movie. We just don't.
Some things I've noticed now that we've watched it like 400 times is how insane it is when he goes down to the mailroom. His dad sends him down to the mailroom to get him out of the office. And he says there's shiny mail getting delivered all over the country. And he talks to the guy and they start drinking whiskey. And he asks him how old he is. And he says 26. But the guy looks like he's 57 years old. The guy with the long stringy hair and the beard that he befriends down there, he's like, oh, I'm 26. I'm like, no. I think that was just John Favreau being like, yeah, I'm going to keep that. That's just a nice, he's so clearly not 26 years old.
Bruce Willis is supposed to be like 34 in Die Hard.
Yeah.
Like we're older than him.
Yeah.
That always blows my mind.
We're officially older than Marv in Home Alone, which is not one of our non-negotiables. Home Alone, sometimes some years I don't watch it.
Ask you that. I was going to ask you about Home Alone because we haven't talked about it yet.
Yeah, I mean, it's not one of my non-negotiables. So I guess we'll keep moving. But yeah, it's some years I watch it, some years I don't. I think when you go to physical humor, there's not a ton in that movie that's relatable. I guess that is where I would go with it. There's not a ton of sentiment until the very, very end of the movie. And how many times can you watch Marv get hit in the face with a brick? And the
fundamental plot of the movie is insane.
Yeah.
Would forget their kid going overseas. And the funniest thing about that movie to me, and we may have talked about this before, is there's just no cell phones.
Yeah.
So it's like, this isn't really... That story, I don't think if you're 15 or something, you get the story even. You know what I mean? Like, it's not going to have as many legs because people are like, what? You forgot your kid and like, now you just call them or just you text somebody or whatever.
And the movie's over. I'm eating junk food. I'm watching rubbish. Merry Christmas, you filthy animal. There's bits in it that are timeless. Like, I'm not trying to shit on Home Alone here, but I just like... If I don't get to it, I don't feel like I've missed anything.
Yeah.
I usually try to put it on, but it's like a background thing. Like maybe you're wrapping presents or doing something else and I'll throw Home Alone on. It's not one I'm trying to sit down and actually.
Yeah. I'm not
watch every single year because I'm like looking forward to another viewing of it, which is
John Williams music.
It's great.
The music in it is great too. The music is very memorable and can be most. But yeah, at the very end you get a little touch. And I will. It's definitely worth watching to get to John Candy. And they were actually just talking about Andy Samberg was talking about how he thinks it would be fun to make a movie about. John Candy does the improvisation about, you know, hey, parenting's hard. You know, I left my kid in a funeral home with the body. You know, he started talking after a few months. And he is great. You could just tell him and Catherine O'Hara had worked together for so long in sketch at Second City. And so they just could. That was one day of shooting and they gave you all that gold. But Andy Samberg said it'd be funny to do a Christmas movie about from the perspective of the kid that was left with the body. And his dad is like a Kenosha kicker. I think that would be fucking, it would probably suck, but the concept of it is very hilarious.
Really funny. It's a great idea.
So with that said, those are the non-negotiables. I do want to just a quick bridge into Dark Christmas. So this is something I do where, you know, Christmas Eve, I like to start off the day with end the day. Christmas Eve, I like to end the day with some of the... maybe anti-holiday movies. And so I've got two Die Hard we've already talked about at length, but Bad Santa is fucking hilarious. And it obviously you gotta watch, you can't watch it around kids. And then the other one I would say is Love Actually. Love Actually has some fantastic sentimental and joyful moments. There's also a lot of heavy stuff. There's a lot of frontal nudity in it. Not necessarily all of the. Honestly, you could just edit out all of the sex stuff. That's like the worst character. That's the worst story track of the whole thing. I love Alan Rickman, Die Hard as well. But I love Alan Rickman in that movie and that scene where him and Emily Thompson, you know, have that moment and she opens the box and it's the Joni Mitchell CD. It's heartbreaking.
He's cheating on his wife, right? Or considering it.
I don't know if they ever explicitly say it's emotional cheating. At the very least, they don't never necessarily say that he steps out on her, but she finds the necklace that he's purchased in Macy's. And she thinks she's getting it for Christmas. And then she opens up a similar type box and it's Joni Mitchell. And then they play Joni Mitchell, and From Both Sides Now is this like really tragic song. But she's realizing the reason why it's just such a great performance by the actress is she's realizing this terrible news, but she has to just take a few beats and allow herself to be emotional with the realization that her husband is wandering away from her marriage. But then she has to put on Christmas for her kids. So she kind of like straightens out the bed really quick, and she goes back out, and she's mom, and we go to the pageant, and then it's after the pageant where she lays on him. She's like, you know, I know. And he gives this line, like, I'm a classic fool. And it's just really fantastic performances by both of them. But like, yeah, Keira Knightley, her track with the guy with the signs, it's a Christmas movie. Colin Frissell having sex with all the Wisconsin chicks. That's the Matt Hayes character. I love that movie. No. And also Bad Santa.
Yeah, I really like Love Actually. It's not one that's like infiltrated my tradition for whatever reason, but it's one that I usually get pulled into. Or like, it's, you know, Chrissy will have ones that she'll want to put on. I'll have my own. And that's one that she'll watch every year. And every when she does, I'm always like, oh yeah, like let's watch Love Actually. That's a great Christmas movie. But it's not one of like the ones that just pops into my head every year that's like, we have to watch Love Actually. But I really enjoy that movie.
Elf and Love Actually are good time capsules for us too, just on, I was like high school, early college. Yeah. I was like 04 or something. So it's funny to get those time capsule movies of like, I remember how big of a deal this was. Cause I remember that was one of the first like crazy ensemble movies, right? And now they try to do that like four or five more times, right? I'm not sure if there's a Valentine's Day movie like that, wasn't it? But
yeah,
it was like a novel idea to do that, what they did. So I remember that being like, wow.
Yeah, there's that. He's just not that into you. They tried to do that with a bunch of Scarlett Johansson.
And somehow I always like rank Love Actually against The Holiday, and Love Actually is the better movie in my opinion. I don't know why. I always relate those two together.
Cameron Diaz is, although she's an iconic, especially Gen Z loves Cameron Diaz in The Holiday. I think her performance is almost unwatchable. Oh yeah, there's all these memes and of her like sitting in the cottage with like all of her like clothing is very iconic. And yeah, she's kind of this like little hero of the Gen Zers, like that particular character. But I just think she's so disingenuous with her performance. And I know I sound like a turd here, like a movie snob, but because you have these great performances from Jude Law and Kate Winslet in The Holiday, and then Cameron Diaz is just trying so hard that I'm just like, next, get back to the other narrative, because I can't watch.
Right.
Any thoughts on Bad Santa?
It's really funny. Yeah. I think Billy Bob, without Billy Bob, I'm not sure that the movie's that funny. I don't know how many people can really kind of pull off that character. Definitely like, a Christmas movie, probably the most nut shots per Christmas movie that there's ever been. Quite a few of them. But man, a great drunk Billy Bob makes for sure.
There's a new scene that has become my favorite, and it's when he first meets Thurman Merman. And the kid's like, he's like, do you know what I want, Santa? He's like, what, a snot rag? Because he's got a bunch of snot on him, and he pulls his beard down, and he goes, that beard's not real. And he's like, yeah, all my hair fell out. I got to wear this shit instead. And he goes, why'd your hair fall out? And he goes, I loved a woman that was unclean.
Yeah.
The kid goes, Mrs. Claus? He goes, no, her sister. It's just like this. Yeah. What are you fucking with me, kid? When he gets wasted, he eats the advent calendar, and then he replaces it with Tylenol and candy corn. We're not watching the movie for sentiment, we're watching it for debauchery, but you know, at the end with, why do you need all that shit, look at all that shit, you know, it kind of comments on the commercialism of this, and but it's such a fucking funny movie. The same with the wooden pickle, just that would be another nice holiday theme party. It's just like a Bad Santa party, and you just get hammered on cheap vodka and make wooden pickles.
Definitely. Yeah.
So let's get to it, you guys. Mike had already teased it. I had already teased it. Another great thing to do over the holidays is watch some of the Office holiday Christmas episodes. One of the greatest and funniest shows of all time. Jordan, can you give us a list of the Office holiday episodes and then let us know what are some of your favorites?
Yeah, so let's go in order. So no Christmas episode, season one, it's only six episodes, and they didn't do a Christmas themed one. So the first of the series is season two, Christmas Party.
And that one has, that's Yankee Swap.
Yep.
Yankee Swap. That's
the iPad.
Is this enough to get like, is this enough to get 15 people drunk?
20 bottles of vodka? Yeah,
that should do it.
He says, you're the expert. He's talking to the cashier at the liquor store, and he goes, you're the expert. Is this enough to get 16 people drunk? It's like 20 bottles of vodka? Yeah, that should do it.
Yeah, cool, box it up.
Box it up.
I use cool, box it up all the time. Okay. That's followed up next season by Benihana Christmas, okay. Which,
Asian
spoiler alert, would be my number one.
Yeah, that's number
one. And then it looks like season four, there's no Christmas episode, so we go to season five, Moroccan Christmas.
Okay,
that's the Meredith AA one or whatever.
Yeah.
Gosh, what's the premise of that? Why are they doing Moroccan Christmas?
Because Phyllis took over the party planning committee from Angela because she was blackmailing Angela with Dwight, and so that's the theme that they do. It's great.
She just comes over, to piss. I think it's just spite Angela. Like, she just, like, does it just to piss her off, yeah.
Yeah, and then Secret Santa.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Followed by Classy Christmas.
Yeah.
That's season seven. That's the last Michael Scott one, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And then the last two, as far as I'm concerned, just don't even count because they're both Michael Scott years, Christmas Wishes, and Dwight Christmas, which... has a moment or two in it, but for the yearly rewatch, we go Michael Scott Christmas episodes only.
Yes, correct. Yeah. Okay, so do you priority rank?
Yeah, Benihana.
Benihana's number one. Tell me why.
Yeah. Oh my god. It's funny because, again, as time goes on, this has been one of those episodes that maybe people have looked back on and been like, "Man, you can't make that episode today. Maybe it's not appropriate." In the Office, making fun of all Asians look alike apparently isn't appropriate anymore. Mm-hmm. But they even said this in the Office ladies, Jenna Fisher and Angelique Kinsley's podcast, where they talked about Benihana Christmas, and they kind of said, "Oh man, like I don't know how they feel about making that episode now." In hindsight, from my perspective, I don't care. It's funny as shit. It's, you'll never get me to change my mind on that. I could be old curmudgeon, backwards old man, and I'll still find Benihana Christmas funny.
So the premise of Benihana's Christmas, if I'm remembering correctly, if I recall correctly, is Michael, that's Skeezin's greetings. So Michael, the episode starts with Michael having two tickets to Jamaica's largest freshwater pool in Sandals, Jamaica.
All
and
inclusive.
He wants to bring his girlfriend, who's the realtor, and he superimposed his head on her husband's body and a family trip that they took to maybe Denver, Colorado. And so she breaks up with him, which leaves him heartbroken. And to rally his spirits, Andy is taking him to Asian Hooters, aka Benihana, for lunch, and trying to get him drunk. The B plot of that is that Angela is such a terror with the holiday planning committee that Pam and Karen start a rival party to plan or committee to plan parties instead of party planning committee. I think that's what it's called. Mm-hmm. And they're having a rival karaoke and booze field Christmas, which is rival to Angela's Nutcracker Christmas. So that's your background with that.
Yeah. So that episode gives us Skeezin greetings, like you mentioned.
Skeezin's
greetings. It also gives us an often quoted line where Jim is describing that situation where he talks about Michael photoshopping his head onto his girlfriend's family Christmas photo and says, bold. Is bold the right word? Is that the right choice?
It's that's bold a bold move to superimpose your boyfriend's head or your head on your girlfriend's ex-husband's body. Is bold the right word?
Yeah. That's great. Michael brings in his bike for donation to needy kids, and then ends up giving it to his waitress girlfriend. Mm-hmm. They go to the Benihana's, right, Asian Hooters, and end up inviting the waitresses back to the Christmas party, which Michael sees as a rebound. Mm-hmm. And Michael being Michael decides that he's in love with this waitress.
Yeah.
He also apparently can't tell one waitress apart from the other because all waitresses look alike.
Yes.
And so he marks one of their hands.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
which is hilarious, right? So funny.
I love the scene when he's going into the to do it, and he's like, "Where are you?" And he starts like eating fake popcorn. He's like, "Nang, nang, 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 nang." It's like just like Steve Carell trying to figure out which one she is. His bit to do it is so stupid. It's so lame. It's hilarious.
Well, and they're also like college kids, right? They're not even like adults.
No, I got school. He invites her to Jamaica.
Yeah. Yeah, the underrated part of that episode is the Pam and Karen party has karaoke at it during that whole thing. So you have Kevin fully committed to Alanis Morissette, where he like goes into a dark place. You. It's such a funny idea for a Christmas party karaoke for someone to take that personally and like really perform. Like,
and Andy's so singing "Body is a Wonderland."
Yeah,
he's singing "Your Body is a Wonderland" like while Michael's flirting with the wrong waitress. Yeah,
right. So the karaoke part of that is awesome, and then you have the Pam part of like Jim's kind of moving on from Pam, and she makes that your gift is this scheme to make fun of Dwight or to prank him. Yeah. And at the end, he's back in. Right, he was out originally, now he's back in. So you have this, you know, the Pam Jim connection is always what makes the show great.
Well done, Mike. Thank you.
Yeah, some heartfelt moments between Jim and Michael at the end, right, where they're sitting down and talking about, you know, Michael's heartbroken over losing the waitress, and you know, Jim tells me you had a rebound. Yeah, and then he gets excited about having a rebound.
But Jim's talking about his own rebound, right? Yeah. So you're number two.
Yeah, and then we're going a season earlier to a Christmas party. Cool box it up, enough booze to get people drunk. Yeah. Lampshade on the head.
Oh, God. He wants that lampshade on the head so bad that he makes it happen himself.
Yeah, because they're not supposed to have a booze-filled Christmas party, basically. I'm trying to remember. Because they were getting bad news about the office potentially shutting down.
Yeah, I think it's just Toby telling him you can't have booze at the party or something like that. And he's a corporate wet blanket. Is that the same episode?
No one's having a good time.
No, that was.
Oh, that's Benihana Christmas when they all get robes, and he's like, "We're down one robe," and he's like, "Take it from Toby."
In that episode, not the season two one is so funny too, because the big gift is an iPod.
Yeah, you're only supposed to have a $20 minimum.
Yeah, but it's
$20
like
limit.
And like Michael gets an iPod. Whatever year that was a big deal. It was like $300 or $200 for an iPod. And it was like, just really funny that was like a big deal as the main present.
Yeah. I only care about you an oven mitts worth.
Whole oven mitts worth.
Yeah. Like, oh, just
well, I got a big bonus for firing Devin and I bought an iPod.
Sue me. Yeah. Oh, God. And then
Packer, too. That's Packer at the end of the episode.
Packard shows up with mistletoe on his belt. Classic, as Michael says. Awesome. The beginning of the episode, they're bringing in the tree, and they've got to use the paper cutter to cut the top of the tree to fit into the office. And Kevin goes, "What do we do with this part?" And Michael goes, "Kevin, that is a perfectly good mini tree, and we will sell that to charity."
And then someone's like, "Why couldn't you have just cut off from the bottom? The tree's all stupid looking because I cut the top off."
Oh, and Phyllis does the shitty lights. Should we have gone with the big lights or the little twinkle lights? And then they light it up like Rockefeller Center, and it's like, not great. And Phyllis starts crying. Oh, God. But yeah, and then Dwight ends up, Michael ends up with Dwight's paintballs, right? The paintball lesson.
Take that, Saddam.
Take that, Saddam. That's worth at least $3,000. Experienced guy like me. Yeah. And then, but that they're speaking of the sentiment, the Jim and Pam, we hadn't, you know, they hadn't got together yet, but Jim finally gets Pam for Secret Santa. He has all these sentimental gifts, and she swaps the teapot with all the sentimental gifts for the iPod. And then Dwight gets the teapot, and he's going to like pour like boiling tea through his nose or something. Yeah. Like that.
Wow. It's like a neti pot where you pour it, you clear your sinuses, and he's just like, the thought of that is too much to handle.
Yeah, yeah. But he, and then he back pockets the card, the sentimental card where he tells her that he loves her, and he gives it to her later. And man, I wonder if they were planting the seeds all along for that, or if they were like, hey, we've got this great kind of just device that we had set in season two, let's call that back. And I wonder if the
I've always wondered that. Yeah, yeah. It's many seasons later, but yeah. it is great. Yeah.
So we have Benihana, Christmas, then we have the Yankee Swap or Christmas Party. Meredith shows Michael his boobs at the end. Hilarious bit where he exhales, takes the picture. Yeah. Well, give me one more, Jordan. What's your third favorite?
Let's talk about this, because have you had your watch yet, either of you guys?
No, I haven't watched them yet.
No, I haven't done it yet this year either, so... we're recording this on the 22nd, so we got a couple days to get it in.
I'll give you mine while you're thinking. It's Classy Christmas, and it's because Holly's coming back to the office after she's been in.
That's right.
I think it's Nashua.
That's like a two-parter, right?
So yeah, it's actually a two-part episode.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And Michael decides to do Classy Christmas, but he doesn't want to hire a whole orchestra to play Classy Christmas music, so he just hires a bassist because it's cheaper. And so it's just a guy sitting in the conference room playing the bass, and Michael gets a red suit tailored and a Kangle hat to make it look like a Santa Claus hat. And then that is where we get you old bastard, because she comes in and says, yeah. Well, you old bastard. So just that alone. And there's a really funny bit in Classy Christmas where they start to do their little like riff or improv. And then Michael goes, come on, I'd like to show you your desk. And he starts pretending to be a Mexican guy. And then the camera pans to Oscar. And he's like, what the fuck? Like, come on, I show you on your desk. So stupid.
Yeah. Isn't this also the one where the... Toby's trying to get like some doll for his daughter.
Yes, yes. And Creed's hustling people for the doll, but then he finally buys the doll, and it's like the black one. Or like Daryl sells the doll.
Oh yeah, yeah. And it's the black one, and he's like, oh,
yeah,
yeah. Well, you don't want this doll. What's wrong with this doll?
Yeah. And like Michael knows the theme song for the commercial for the toy. Like he like sings it.
Oh, like, my horn will pierce the sky.
Yeah, yeah. He's like, oh my god, you have. Like, he knows all about the toy, and like he's up to date on it. It's so funny,
dude. Yeah, so that's the one I want to throw out while you're gathering your thoughts.
And then there's the Secret Santa, yeah, that episode from season. Is that season six? Yeah, that's the year before Classy Christmas.
Is the snowball one a Christmas episode?
That's Classy Christmas.
Okay, so that is Classy Christmas.
Yeah, where Jim's all like, yeah. So that's Dwight pranking Jim
finally. Yeah,
Jim's really on edge the whole time because.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. It's a very snowman.
The seat plot. Yeah,
and Dwight's just like looking down on him, like I've broken you.
Yeah.
No, you're like I'm everywhere and nowhere at the same time.
Yeah,
and then. The secret Santa one is the one where Phyllis gets to be Santa and Michael can't handle it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Bob Vance starts to beat him up.
Have you ever seen Santa? Yeah.
Another one of he calls Phyllis Tranny Claus, which is another one of those jokes
doesn't he turn the Santa outfit inside out and he plays Jesus, and they're like, you just can't do that, Michael. Like, yeah.
Yeah, that's right. He did. Yeah.
I'm Jesus.
Which one? And then I should know this because this is my Christmas sweater, but the happy birthday, Jesus. I'm sorry your party's so lame.
That was the Yankee Swap. Yeah.
Is that Yankee Swap? Yeah.
Because everyone starts to get pissed off at each other, and we all bought each other. And he's like, you know, happy birthday, Jesus. Sorry your party's so lame. So
yeah.
Anyway,
the one where Kevin sits on Michael's lap.
Mm-hmm.
I wish for you 1,000 balloons.
Yeah. So well, anyway,
like Jordan said, we came, but anyone out there, great idea. Just throw in a couple office apps before the movie comes on or whatever. It's great. It's perfect. Just out in the background, people getting organized, and then hit the movie. It's like 45.
Have a couple drinks, get a little loose,
start having a good time. And then you can put on the main event, whatever it is. That's the way to do it.
Wow. This has been a blast. I'm glad we did. I hope you guys enjoyed the smorgasbord as much as I did. Anyone listening, if you were on a very long car ride, maybe a little over an hour, maybe you were, crossing a few cities over to go visit grandma and were able to listen to us, enjoyed, maybe you have some similar traditions, maybe you're a little different, maybe we inspired you to add some things to your list, but I appreciate you guys coming on. Thanks, Mike and Jordan from Denver.
Of course, it was great.
Yeah, awesome.
Happy holidays, everybody.
Yeah, happy holiday, and thanks. Happy. Hey, thanks, Dad, for coming on.
Oh, you're very welcome. It's great to be with all the three of you, and I heard some interesting comments and conversations. This has been a real blast. And
welcome to the radio, buddy.
Thank you,
and our listeners. What a Christmas miracle that you guys give us your time, which is very valuable and precious. So thank you guys for listening. Don't forget to smash the subscribe button. And if you like what you heard, leave us a little review. Feel free. And we'll see you down the road. Take care. Happy holidays. Be safe.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas. Happy Chinooka. That's it. Recording done.